You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered.
Listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel.
And I'm Benedict Jones. This is the Daily Local News for Thursday, February 21st, 2019.
We're going to make sure that the right person with the right vision takes the place. And particularly what I mean by that is somebody who is going to keep the interests of people who use drugs first and foremost in their mind.
Chris Abert founded the Indiana Recovery Alliance after walking along the Snowy Beeline Trail in Bloomington and handing out blankets years ago. Abert is moving out of Indiana. We'll hear more about the future for Abert and the IRA in today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, with the president declaring a national emergency on the United States southern border last week, our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, asks area residents how they feel about a border wall. That's coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines.
An election campaign Facebook post for Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton was shared by the city's official account before being deleted. Mayor Hamilton is currently running for re-election, and under Indiana law, it is illegal to use public resources for re-election campaigns. City of Bloomington Communications Director Mary Catherine Carmichael said she shared the campaign post using the city's account by accident. Mayor Hamilton is giving his State of the City address tonight at the Buskirk Chumley Theater in downtown Bloomington. The first-term Democrat will face opposition from Monroe County Commissioner Amanda Barge, who is running against Hamilton for the Democratic primary in May. Barge is expected to give a response to the State of the City tomorrow morning at her campaign headquarters on Kirkwood Avenue. Carmichael, who is formerly the spokeswoman for the Bloomington mayor's office, said she's not likely to make the same mistake again.
The irony of this for me is I'm often the person in employee meetings reminding people to be very careful and very mindful of not crossing the line between public employee and political supporter. So I am quite chagrined, as you might imagine, that I made this mistake, but it won't happen again.
Carmichael says she's asked to have her administrative privileges over the city's Facebook account removed.
A Rougeville, Indiana tax preparer is refusing to offer her services to a lesbian couple. The Washington Post reports that Nancy Fivecoat of Carter Tax Service near Kokomo has previously prepared Bailey Brazell's taxes. This year, Brazell and her wife, Samantha, went to Carter Tax Service together. Fivecoat refused to prepare the Brazell's taxes. In a written statement, Fivecoat stated, quote, "I am a Christian and I believe marriage is between one man and one woman. I was very respectful to them. I told them where I thought she might be able to get her taxes prepared." The statement continues, quote, "The LGBT want respect for their beliefs, which I give them. I did not say anything about their lifestyle. That is their choice. It is not my choice. Where is their respect for my beliefs?" Unquote. Sexual orientation is not protected under statewide Indiana law. Instead, municipalities and counties may pass anti-discrimination ordinances. Rougeville, a town of 1,000 in northern Indiana, does not have any such ordinances.
Indiana State Senate Republicans voted to gut a hate crimes bill yesterday. Senate Republicans hold a supermajority in both the State Senate and the State House of Representatives. Senate Bill 12, which was authored by Lafayette Republican Ron Alting, originally included language citing demographics for a court considering whether a crime was prejudicially motivated. State Senate Republicans voted to pass an amendment removing two-thirds of Senate Bill 12 yesterday. Seven Republicans, including the bill's author, Ron Alting, broke ranks and voted against the amendment along with Senate Democrats. The revised Senate Bill 12 is expected to pass in the Senate today. Senate Republicans control 40 of the chamber's 50 seats. The Times of Northwest Indiana reports Senate Republicans met for 4 hours to discuss in caucus how they would vote on the bill. As the Times of Northwest Indiana reports, state law permits party caucuses to meet without public scrutiny to strategize. Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb and business leaders across the state have recently pushed the state's legislature to pass a hate crimes bill. Indiana is one of just 5 states without such a bill. Governor Holcomb asked the state legislature to consider the measure after a Carmel synagogue was vandalized with Nazi graffiti last year. Statewide business owners have stated they believe passing a hate crimes bill will help attract business opportunities in the state. Governor Holcomb issued a statement on Tuesday about Senate Bill 12, which read in part, quote, "The version of the bill approved today by the Senate does not get Indiana off the list of states without a bias crime law. We have a long way to go, a lot of work to do, and fortunately, the time yet still to do it." The state Senate is expected to pass Senate Bill 12 this afternoon. Some Democrats, including Bloomington Senator Mark Stoops, have stated they will not support the bill after specific groups were stripped from it.
Monroe County's day reporting and treatment programs for juveniles are saving the county money. That's according to Deputy Chief Probation Officer Troy Hatfield. Hatfield presented a report on the programs to the Monroe County Commissioners yesterday. Hatfield identified 8 core strategies at work in the initiative. Among them are interagency collaboration, reducing special detention cases like probation violation, and reducing racial and ethnic disparities. He explained how the program is implemented.
We've got 4 main alternatives that we use in our community to try to keep our youth here in our community rather than sending them about 2.5 hours away to a detention center. Those are our day reporting program, which really kind of focuses on the youth prior to being adjudicated for an offense or being found guilty of an offense, so that pretrial phase. Our day reporting program focuses more on the kids after they have been found guilty or adjudicated for an offense to really focus on keeping them from going back to detention. And then we also use electronic monitoring in our local shelter as alternatives to detention.
Hatfield provided a few statistics in asking the commissioners for their ongoing support. He said the program's total admissions for 2017 to 2018 decreased by 32%. The number of youths detained in the same time period decreased by 11%.
Also, some things that have been working as well, our average daily population has decreased 41%. Our length of stay has also decreased for the kids that are going by 22%. And then our utilization of bed days, the total bed days the youth are there, has dropped 41%. And that means a cost savings to our county and to our community. We've got almost a 40% decrease in the amount we have spent on security detention because we're able to provide these initiatives.
Though the number of felony referrals only dropped about 3%, Hatfield said the program is still making progress. The day reporting and treatment programs are part of the larger Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative. The Annie E. Casey Foundation piloted the initiative. Indiana joined in 2006, and Monroe County launched it locally in 2014. On the State of Indiana website, the JDAI is described as refocusing resources away from mass incarceration and into youth, families, and communities.
The main piece is that collaboration. We have people that join our committees that are not just in the juvenile justice system, but we have local treatment providers, local health care providers, parents, in addition to the law enforcement, probation, our local youth shelter, and the juvenile court.
The nonprofit Family Solutions is the local provider for the juvenile day reporting and treatment programs. The commissioners approved a $50,000 agreement with Family Solutions to cover the program's operational expenses when state reimbursements fall short. Commissioner Amanda Barge expressed concern about the issue of racial and ethnic disparity. She said she supports programs that work, but wants to make sure that they address the right people.
Our jail population, there seems to be a disparity there, and then also when you look at MCCSC population, the rates of people of color who are, they're disciplined at a more extreme rate than our kids who are not. So I'm curious how we're kind of attacking that problem.
As you notice, one of the 8 core strategies is a commitment to reducing racial and ethnic disparities. We are right now forming a race, equity, and inclusion committee locally to really tackle this issue and work towards this issue to hopefully make an impact on reducing those disparities. If anybody is interested in joining that committee, please contact our department, 812-349-2645. Speak with Christine McAfee, our JDI coordinator, and we're looking for volunteer involvement and people with knowledge and skills as well to help us out and kind of keep us driving in the right direction.
The commissioners went on to approve a $5,000 contract with legal research firm LexisNexis. Attorney Jeff Cockrell told the commissioners the contract allows those housed in the Monroe County Correctional Center to access online legal research tools.
Later in a work session, Monroe County commissioners discussed their ongoing concern that the county's rental units all have smoke detectors. Commissioner Thomas said initially she thought the county could simply pass a tenant's request for smoke detectors to county fire departments. Thomas explored the solution with a risk reduction team.
So what happened is in the meetings with the risk reduction group through the fire departments, plural, of the county, they can go in and assess smoke detectors, the needs, etc. If you look at our code, it requires one per floor. But if you are building a new place, then you have different requirements, which involves the living areas and many more detectors. The problem that the fire departments shared with us is that they don't want to be responsible. So let's say a tenant says, yes, can you come over and make sure that my smoke detectors are working and that they're in the right place? And let's say a fire department goes over there and they put up a smoke detector. The landlord then comes back and says, hey, you ruined my wall. You ruined my ceiling by installing this, right? You didn't have my permission. So that was their concern, although they did also say, we don't know of anybody that's ever been sued for that.
A number of issues surfaced in the discussion, including the need to ensure county inspectors. Commissioners also discussed strengthening installation requirements, as well as educating both landlords and tenants. Health Administrator Penny Caudill suggested strengthening partnerships with existing programs to start.
Right now, and I hope I get this right because I'm speaking for another agency, but the fire departments work with Red Cross. And for instance, early March, Red Cross is doing another blitz. So they do these blitzes once or twice a year, I think, where they go into neighborhoods and kind of house by house and see if they have them, and they will place them and what have you. And Red Cross helps supply the fire departments with the smoke detectors.
As a short-term solution, Caudill agreed to work on developing a web form through which tenants can request smoke detector inspections or installations. She'll also develop a letter notifying landlords a request has been made. Commissioner Thomas said the county will likely need to change its rental housing code to make smoke detector requirements more stringent. She identified the code change as a longer-term solution that would require state-level approval. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograph and Ben Neoff. Slotograph Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or at slotographlegal.com. Slotograph Neoff, law for business, community, and life.
Chris Abert says he founded the Indiana Recovery Alliance after walking along the Beeline Trail in Bloomington and handing out blankets years ago. The area nonprofit is engaged in what Abert terms harm reduction, helping people experiencing addiction work towards, quote, any positive change. The Indiana Recovery Alliance exchanges clean needles and paraphernalia, conducts training on how to reverse overdoses, and distributes the overdose reversal drug Narcan, sometimes called naloxone. Abert is now moving out of Indiana. In today's feature report, he tells WFHB News Director Wes Martin about his accomplishments and what will happen with the Indiana Recovery Alliance after his departure.
So I will be moving out of state. I've been planning a move for a little bit over a year. and now it's happening. The Indiana Recovery Alliance is going to take its time to make sure that the right person is chosen for the position. This is going to involve obviously getting resumes in, and then volunteers, participants, the board, and employees doing interview and vetting process. So there's no time limit on it. A lot of the administrative duties that I have, if I needed to leave, I'm be able to do those from afar. So we're really going to take our time, and we're going to make sure that the right person with the right vision takes the place. And particularly what I mean by that is somebody who is going to keep the interest of people who use drugs first and foremost in their mind, and to make sure that we, you know, work toward changing the narrative about people who use drugs and about the situations that they find themselves in.
This year has been kind of a big year for the Indiana Recovery Alliance. I know that the IRA and you in particular have been involved in drafting legislation that would get rid of Indiana's felony syringe possession. Can you give us an update about where that bill is?
Sure. We have two pieces of legislation that are hopefully going to be heard in committee and then passed on for a vote. The first one is an expansion of the Good Samaritan law to make sure that when people call 911 in case of an overdose emergency, that they don't have to worry about receiving charges for, say, possession of the drug that almost killed them, or bystanders, suddenly finding themselves arrested and in jail when they were just trying to save somebody's life. So we're excited about that, and that is, nothing has been heard in committee yet, so we're going to have those heard and then moved on. And the other is the First Responder Safety Act, and the idea is that when a first responder shows up, that prior to either a pat-down, if it's a law enforcement officer, or just interactions in general for EMTs, that if a person says, hey, I have a syringe in my pocket, I don't want you to get poked, that they would then be immune from arrest and prosecution for that. So it's a partial decriminalization law with an eye on keeping first responders safe. 1 in 3 first responders will have an accidental needle stick at some point within their career. And we know that with a simple piece of legislation like this, we can decrease that by about 66%. So it's kind of a no-brainer. We have a lot of law enforcement buy-in for it. The problem will be the prosecutorial association. So IPAC is the major association for prosecutors, and they tend to lean towards being against anything that takes away their power to prosecute. So the idea of public health or human rights really isn't appealing to them. The idea of prosecuting people for supposed illegal activities is, because we're trying to move away from a criminalized system to, again, this public health and human rights system. And the key players in the status quo right now don't want that to happen. It's absolutely necessary, unless we want to continue increase in overdose fatalities and mass incarceration, there's going to have to be a fundamental shift. We hope to start making dents in that.
And Chris, can you tell us a little bit more about this transition for the IRA in this transitional time? Is there a timeline in place for you to move or for IRA to get new leadership?
Well, if people want to send, if somebody's interested and wants to send their resume in, they can send it to info@IndianaRecoveryAlliance.org. We're going to be accepting resumes through probably mid-March, and then we'll begin the selecting process. And as I said, the selecting process is going to include participants, volunteers, employees, and the board of directors. So we're pretty confident. I'm absolutely confident that the right person will be chosen, given the process that we're going to have to make sure that that's the case. We've really built up the Indiana Recovery Alliance to be driven by participants' needs, up to and including making sure that participants are active at all levels, including the board of directors. So given that, and given the amount of work that's done, and given, honestly, we have the most amazing volunteers and employees and board, So I just feel really, really confident that the Indiana Recovery Alliance is going to thrive. There's one thing I think that is really important as well. Oftentimes, when people found a nonprofit, it can get founder syndrome, and maybe in some ways not grow in ways that are best. So this is a really good way, obviously, to make sure that doesn't happen by, you know, myself moving on and somebody else with the same foundation of beliefs, able to maybe move it in different directions, new and exciting directions, always with the idea that the interests of people who are using drugs are a primary concern.
That was Indiana Recovery Alliance founder and outgoing director Chris Abert speaking with WFHB News Director Wes Martin.
Support comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This past Friday, President Donald J. Trump declared a national emergency in order to redirect funding to the construction of the wall along the Mexican-American border. Since then, 16 states have sued President Trump over his declaration. Voices in the Street went out to ask area listeners if they support the construction of the wall.
How do you feel about Trump's wall?
I feel that something needs to be in place where our current immigration policy will work only when people can't, when they're, like currently everything's fine and they go back, but then the repeat people that are coming back, that's what I think the problem is. Not anything with keeping people out. It's more about the people that need to go out don't come back in, because a lot of times you see three or four or five times people coming back in. I think there should be big doors everywhere on it if there is something, but as far as it being a complete waste of money, I think that people in the past have approved up to 700 miles of it in the past, and everyone's been for it in the past. It's made sense in the past, but I think a lot of it's more just politics right now.
It's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, all the facts and research has showed that illegal crossings have dropped, keep dropping, and the migrant caravan are people coming who want to come to this country as asylum seekers or refugees to work. And most likely they're going to work the jobs that the majority of Americans don't want to work. And they're looking for better lives in countries that our government, through various channels, seeked to destabilize as for whatever their own gains were, political, social, or economic. So I think the border wall is, I think, an absolute shame on this country.
It's not. I don't know. I don't think it's going to work. I don't know what it's for.
Trump's wall, I'm not sure what he's trying to accomplish with it. It depends on what kind of wall he's actually proposing. With $5 billion, it doesn't seem like he's going to get the wall that he had talked about earlier, so I'm not sure what he has in mind. I think a wall in certain areas of the border would be effective. There's only certain areas of the border that are actually problem areas, but...
Oh, my God. There are a lot of different sides to it. I mean, just some of this latest stuff. Oh, God. I find very, very troubling. I can see realities on both sides, but this really gets into, I'm an independent politically. Honestly, I just haven't had the time to really research it the way I really, really want to for me personally. So I'm just a little up in the air still.
So yeah, that's, I just don't think architecturally that's viable. And I think it's been documented that the majority of the kinds of crimes that he says the wall will stop enter the U.S. through other venues, not across that border. And so I think if he wants to allocate funds, they ought to go toward those particular venues instead of toward building this massive thing. Well, I don't think it's a good idea.
I think there are certain aspects of the border that we do need to work on, but I don't think like an actual wall is the best solution. But definitely I think we need to tighten up on, you know, drugs coming in and stuff. Maybe some sort of border up on border security people, but not like an actual big wall, you know?
Personally, I hate it. I think it makes a division between not only Americans, but Latinas here in the country that's on this side and Latinas that are on the other side, and just creates even more division than we don't even need. And when the country needs to be uniting, it's just sad.
I think he's just throwing a tinder tantrum, and it's just something that's drawing everybody's attention away from other issues. I don't know. There's a lot to think about.
I don't think it's going to work because the Democrats won't. They will find a way not to pay for that. I think so. This country has always been a country of immigration, and using that as an excuse for the people to vote for the president, the current president, I think it's pretty, I'm going to say smart, because the only thing that you fear is fear itself.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Andrew McKieran and Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Voices in the Street was produced by Isaac Gonzalez. Our engineer today is Dan Withard, with help from Kevin Oliver. Our theme music is provided by Ben Lumstein, Scott Schmadke, and Danny Graff. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, this is Benedict Jones.
And I'm Carolyn Vanderweel. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered independent daily news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glab, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next, right here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcast of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.